Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC, New York Public Radio, this is Soundcheck On Demand. I'm John Schaefer. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
This is an encore edition of Soundcheck.
Your cheating heart will make you weep. You'll cry.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. In a little while, we'll be looking at the big money to be made by some orchestral conductors. But first, it seems there may be even bigger money to be made online, and possibly bigger than it should be. Paul Reznikoff is founder and editor of the online magazine Digital Music News. He joins us by phone to discuss the latest news from the U.S. Department of Justice. Paul, welcome to Soundcheck.
Hey, thanks so much for having me today.
So the U.S. Department of Justice has announced an investigation into the possibility of anti-competitive practices in the field of music downloading. What exactly are they looking for?
Indeed. Well, the central point we're talking about is the 99-cent paid download. Many people are familiar with iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
And on iTunes, you can surf around, find a song that you like, download it for 99 cents, and then have some fun with it. But the question is, where did that price come from, and what are labels charging stores like iTunes and other outlets like Napster for that track?
Right. So that, although 99 cents seems like a small enough chunk of change, when you think about it, the industry is, they make one copy of this song and then there's no production cost after that.
Right.
So why is it 99 cents even if you sell a million of them?
Right. So after a certain point, the investment is great, right? It's after selling a million tracks and all your costs are basically running to zero, which is fantastic.
Right.
There are costs that labels have. They do have to pay out different rights holders. There are costs associated with developing an artist and keeping the lights on and that sort of thing. I think what the DOJ is most concerned with is how did labels arrive at the wholesale price that they charge Apple, and why is it so similar between different labels?
Right. So you've got the four big labels. There's Universal, there's the Warner Music Group, there's Sony BMG, and finally EMI Music. These are all potential targets of the Department of Justice. Have any of them responded to this yet?
Yes. Interestingly, Warner Music Group, which is publicly traded, did file with the SEC and note that they had received an inquiry from the Department of Justice. And other labels have also reportedly received requests for information. At this point, we're still in the early stages, so we don't know exactly where it's going or exactly where the DOJ is investigating. I would expect all the labels to be cooperative. And I think it's also worth noting that New York Attorney General Elliot Spitzer has also created a similar inquiry. So in a lot of ways, a lot of these documents have already been pulled and surfaced. So there are two parallel investigations going on right now.
Right. And actually, we've covered some of New York Attorney General Spitzer's investigations earlier. Sony BMG ended up paying $10 million and Warner agreed to pay $5 million to settle similar accusations earlier. So now the Department of Justice going down that same route.
There's one difference here. Those settlements are actually for payola-related charges. Those were accusations based on whether or not those labels had basically paid for placement on specific radio outlets and therefore affected the sales of their singles or exactly what's being played on the radio. So now downloading is another aspect, which is basically what is the price that you're paying for a paid download online? But it's totally separate from the radio charges.
Okay, but I guess both of these organizations, both of these companies, have had a fair amount of dealing with our Elliot Spitzer.
Yeah, they're used to hanging with Elliot.
Yeah. So I mean, let's look at this from the consumer point of view. First of all, how are the downloading prices set? And you're right; it is kind of suspicious that four competing groups all end up with the same price. How do you think that happened?
Well, what isn't going on is there's not a smoky room between the labels. The labels aren't sitting around and saying, "So what should we charge here as a wholesale price to iTunes or to Napster or whatever the store is?" The labels are too smart for that. But what it turns out is, and I think what will surface as the investigation proceeds is that there are a lot of hooks and levers in the contracts that labels have created with companies like Apple. For a wholesale price, what a label does a lot of times is in a lot of contracts, they have what's called a most favored nations clause. And what that does is that says, okay, Apple, I've given you my material, and this is what I'm charging for it. And if the next label gets a better deal, then I get that same deal as well.
Right.
So it essentially establishes parity between the different wholesale prices. And then there's other little levers, too. Like a lot of labels have clauses in the contracts that say, you know, so we have this most favored nations clause, but after a year, I get to audit competing contracts and make sure that everybody's playing fair here.
Mm-hmm.
So it becomes a little bit tricky at that point, because if you can say, hey, there was this meeting between all four major labels and they all started laughing and charged the same price, well, then that's clear collusion, and then they were really talking about something here. But with these different devices and what exists in different contracts, it gets a little bit confusing. So it's going to be interesting to see how this whole thing plays out.
Yeah, now Apple's Steve Jobs called the industry executives greedy for wanting, you know, variable pricing on downloads. I mean, what is Apple's investment in this?
Well, it's really interesting because Apple really charged into the market, and Steve Jobs had a very distinct vision about how he wanted to sell music. And that was to charge the same price for a download and create an easy interface. And when it came to pricing, the idea was, well, let's not confuse the consumer here. Let's just say every track is the same price and see what happens. So iTunes has sold 1 billion downloads, so it's worth noting that has happened. So there has been some success around that. But it's actually been a little bit inflexible about changing prices and charging different prices for different content. And labels are pressuring Jobs to adopt a variable pricing plan with the idea that a track that just came out or that is really popular should cost more than a track that's rather obscure or less in demand. So,
but are the labels going to sell those older, less popular tracks for less money, I guess is the question? Or will they still be charging iTunes, you know, 80 cents for every song no matter what?
Right, that's it, right? So, yeah, it's not really clear they're going to lower the prices.
Yeah,
they probably just want to increase it on the more popular.
Right, so
popular
we'll keep selling you the songs for 80 cents each, but we think you should sell these for 59 cents a pop and take a loss. Single downloads are booming, and again, we're speaking with Paul Reznikoff. He's the founder and editor of Digital Music News. Single downloads are booming, but I don't know if you've heard about the R&B singer Ne-Yo.
Yeah,
on the island with his singles, with the single "So Sick," the trend has been you release the single on iTunes first, and then the album comes out. Island Def Jam decided to reverse that and ended up with the hottest debut CD of the year so far because Ne-Yo's record, in my own words, reached the number one position yesterday.
That's
what do you make
right.
of that?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting one. Basically, what they did is they decided they're just going to withhold the digital track for sale until the actual week that the CD was out. So, and that, of course, as you just stated, kind of bucks the trend previously. I'm not sure if that is such a shocking move, because I think as digital formats start to evolve, labels become a lot more savvy about how they position digital tracks and that sort of thing. And I think part of the game for labels is to try to create this pent-up demand. So that you're hearing a song, you're all about it, you love it, and then once the album is out, then you run to the store and grab it.
Mm-hmm.
And this has been going on forever. before the whole digital realm kicked in, labels would always carefully time exactly when a single went to radio and when the album was available and whether a single was available. Like, all these things are pretty well calculated. And I think there's a lot of learning going on now with the labels. So we're going to see a lot more experimentation on this.
And the funny thing is, they seem not to have hurt the sales of their digital version of the single So Sick, because that sold over 100,000 copies the first week it was available as well. So
right.
Trends are changing, but the U.S. Department of Justice is taking a look at what's behind all of it, looking into the big four record labels and whether there was a bit of price fixing or anti-competitive practices, as they put it. We've been speaking with Paul Reznikoff, the founder and editor of the online magazine Digital Music News. Paul, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks again.
This is Soundcheck, and in a moment, orchestra CEOs, are they worth the money they make? And then in a little while, Nishat Khan, master of the Indian sitar, joins us for a live performance. Thanks for listening to Soundcheck from WNYC, New York Public Radio. Each day we dig into what's happening in music, and you can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. All of this is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. Thanks.